for digital integration. We help them a minimum of 50% for South African content, and then 20% will be local content from the country which we have exported, or it can come from any other country within the African region, then that will form the remainder 20%. Having said that, it could actually be more. These are minimum numbers. If it is 100%, then if it is in African continent, we would love to actually share that pro rata also with our neighbor countries. There are key challenges, though, and I think this has been discussed previously in previous meetings that we have attended with the committee. The non-availability of IMU budget represents a major challenge for competitive cost of funds for South African exporters, and this has been raised as our key risk indicator, especially because the commitment of funds for the IMU incentive scheme exceeds available budget within the MTF period. That is, I think currently we stand at about 2.4 billion, which is the commitment that we have made for 2031 in terms of the IMU agreement, which, as the committee will appreciate, is much longer because of the nature of the project that we deal with than what could be accommodated within the MTF budget. Slow growth of the global economy still presents major challenges. That means that the demand for South African produced goods in the countries that we are focusing on is also slowing down. One would want to appreciate that there has been some serious growth that has been achieved in Sub-Saharan Africa, but at the same time, there are already some headwinds that we are observing. We have seen the public debt position of most of the countries actually be challenged. The continued commodity slowdown that has affected our mining projects, especially in the key minerals which we have been more focused on or more weight in favor, copper, for instance, in Zambia and DRC. We do already have some serious challenges that are coming from our major mine in the Boy in Zambia. I mean, the infrastructure is needed. So in order to summarize in terms of our performance then, in terms of the annual targets for projects approved that are already stated, we only achieved $150 million against 102. And in terms of the level of insurance policies actually signed, and this would be policies that are signed which started to be up yet, and then they are only concluded, as I mentioned, that some of the projects that we deal with take longer to actually reach closure and also get to receive signed. And we achieved $3 million of those. We have also mentioned that I think the target of $605 million in investment and investment declaration, we achieved $920 million. The major point here in the Lama project is Gen Power, the fire power station. We have wanted to sign 5 cooperation engagement knowledge sharing initiatives, and we have achieved the target with the global and other BCAs, where we have interchange of knowledge sharing platforms, e-training. Performance again, targets on the promotion of export promotions and campaigns and reductions. We have exceeded that target. We achieved 23, I think, against 18 that set up for ourselves. And we also do a lot of country research. We have produced executive reports. We have produced 3, but the other one we held back because of the issues when trying to get into South Sudan and because of the issues that we observed there that we saw before the Jacob Bible. Implementation of marketing campaigns, I've already mentioned that we have done major ventures, but we have also, because we want to support emerging enterprises as well in all the provinces, we have added 6 provinces for start, but we found ourselves actually covering all provinces in Southern Nigeria. In 5% to be retained, the target has been exceeded here. I think we achieved terms of financial highlights, we generated the highest return on net operating income of 1.8 million, 1.7 million. Total income exceeded budget by 139% at 2.4 million. Surplus for the period was 165.7 million, and capital expenditure was 4.8 million, primarily through the investment, as I mentioned, in ERP and also business process. Interest income subsidies paid by certain institutions amounted to 721 million. Total assets stood at 7.9 million rand, which is a 44% growth from 2014. Capital for the equity was at 4.6 million, which is 24% growth from 2014. This capital obviously is the money that we also hold in terms of the regulatory regime by the Financial Services Board, which determines the amount of capital, minimum capital that we should hold, and usually this is invested in the money market, or the financial, in the capital market. Insurance liabilities were 3.6 million, which was a 111% increase from 2014. This is due to increase in export supported, especially that you know, the field also that major project that we supported in GAM. In terms of our financial performance, the summary table there actually indicates the movement in terms of our operating expenditure and the compensation to employees as well as the total operating cost. And I think one key thing that we want to mention here is that the bulk of the movement in our total expenditure has been around insurance reserves that we do with employees, compensation, remuneration only being about 49%. I think that our sort of brief highlights.
Thank you, Mr. Kofi. Members, that is the presentation. It's open now for discussion or for points of clarity. Honorable Goranov, Honorable Sedwish, Honorable Williams, and Honorable Mofishan. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. There's two questions. The one is there any risk in terms of the investments or the loans you are covering, you know, on ongoing projects that you want to highlight to us that you are think you will not recover or that the projects are not, you know, not so successful as they should be? First question. And then secondly, on your last slide, the insurance technical liabilities, you know, there's a huge discrepancy between the budget and the actual. Can you just explain that to us?
Thank you very much, sir. I just wanted to ask your comment on the recent discussions among certain government officials and economists in the business press that I've been reading over the last few weeks. Some of which have been calling for a fully-fledged export-import bank in South Africa. And I wondered whether that is a call that you support and whether any such discussions are in fact taking place in Japan. I'm really interested to get your view on that. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got a few questions. First of all, on slide 10, it talks to the performance against targets, and you said that you targeted annual target of $432 million for projects approved by the board, but actually you'd only approved $116 million worth. So I just want to know why is there that big difference. I'd also like to know what your vacancy rate is, because I believe that the previous time you appeared here before Parliament there was a problem with your vacancy, so I want to know what your vacancy rate is. And I'd also like to know what percentage of goods and services is spent on external consultants, and why can't this job be done in-house? Thank you.
Sorry, Jim. Thank you. Thank you for the question, Sasha. And I think that we can all agree, especially with those that have understanding or knowledge in export, that credit finance insurance is probably one of the most single important aspects, and hence can be one of the most challenging. I just want to know, what are your terms that you offer your clients, and how are those terms calculated? And what is your markup on that you offer as a percentage against obviously however you benchmark yourself against the market? And what is your entity focused on specific export markets as opposed to anybody who comes to you process? Do you hedge on currencies? I know that's a wide practice in the insurance and finance sector. And how long does it take for you to approve a transaction? Because now I know that certainly in the, when you go to the private sector, it can take some time, as you have indicated. But I'll disagree with you on the point that you make, that it's difficult for small businesses to obtain export finance and insurance. Before I came to Parliament, my business still is an export business, and we had no such problem. In fact, the banks actually fell over themselves. The problem was the race in which they offer on exports. So I think it leads to an interesting question that the Honourable Phil Lewis alluded to on such a finance and development export bank, and how they would then be marketed or compete against private financial institutions. But there's also something that I want to disagree with you on, slide 9. You said that the key challenge to you is the slowdown of the global economy. I mean, that doesn't really make sense, because when you look at our currency and how it's devalued, certainly over time, it's cheaper for foreign businesses to buy our goods. So I think that it speaks to rather a problem with what our export markets are focused on. If our exports are declining, they actually should be increasing as our currency decreases. And it's my question that I had asked earlier about the specific focus on who you approve or who you get involved with. Because, I mean commodities is a declining industry, whereas durable goods is an increasing industry. So I think that if we're seeing a slowdown in exports, I think we've got to refocus where our export markets are and who we're assisting to actually get those deals and finance and insurance too.
Maybe from my just few questions. Firstly, on the last time you appeared before the committee, on your challenge which you have put there on the IMU, there was a recommendation from the committee that the treasurer must consider funding for that purpose. Has there been any engagement with treasurer in regards to that recommendation? What is the status now between you and the treasurer? The second question is, I will agree with you that SMEs, especially from the previously disadvantaged, they find it difficult to get funding from the banks. And at the same time, very few of them, they have been finding it difficult everybody getting involved in this export business, in obtaining licenses, both for imports and exports, so that they are actually grounded on that. Is there anything that maybe in that regard we should do to assist? But surely the attitude of South Africans have not changed when it comes to small black businesses and finding it very difficult to obtain finance from the banks. In fact, in some regards, sometimes there are those businesses get up time from the very financial institutions of government because they tend to want to apply the very same relevant rules which will create you to actually be an alternative to that. So what is your maybe your comment on that?
Thanks, Chairman. In terms of the so-called ongoing project, yes, we do have some projects that are in difficulties that have led to a lot of restructuring. I have mentioned the Kipoi copper mine in Zambia, which is a major investment of about $400 million. Since the decline in the copper price, international copper prices, we have seen a number of amendments of the policy, amendment of the financing structure and all that. And we are still, as I speak, meeting with them this evening, the sponsors to try to, restructure the project on a long-term basis. The bank that was supporting the project, it's a number of banks, but our local bank, there was another bank. We are working very closely with them. The current indications are that the main sponsor, the corporate sponsor in Idansa, may in a contract step in with an increased guarantee support. So at this moment, while by the fourth quarter, we were already getting indications that we might be faced with a claim that may not actually come through because of the ability of the main key sponsor to actually step in with corporate guarantees. There are other smaller projects where restructuring has happened. We have a bigger project that has been in difficulty. It was a sovereign debt to the Republic of Sudan, where we have had some old project that we did by water. And the indications are also that the project may be sold to some other funders so that we actually get us out of that project. But currently, we do not foresee any indication that we may be faced with a delay as it currently stands. But now and then, we will get into these challenges. But our ability to get long, to patience in restructuring and even extending the terms of the transaction assists us in mitigating those risks. In terms of our technical liabilities, there is a huge discrepancy there. I think what Edward Fire said is that when you write big transactions and you book in the premium there, you actually do everything in terms of the assumed probability or any profile over time of those upfront premium that you have. You reserve more for them in the beginning of the project compared to the current method that we use. So that immediately pushes the current liability or reserves upwards. So that's why it actually follows. We write a major project and then we charge the premiums upfront. A lot of those will find themselves reserved and coming technical liabilities and then will be released over time as the loan profile of according to the loan profile of just, we have been participating in the discussions around the Exim Bank. selected place were led by the national treasurer. The idea here is that it's feasible for us to have that, given the other institutions that we have in the country, the other GFIs, etc. And at the moment, the discussion, to my knowledge, is still continuing. But EDIC has not been asked to lead the discussion. The discussion is being led by the national treasurer at this moment. From where we stand at this moment, I can probably mention that we have recently received approval by the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Trade and Industry to take up shares in the Uplifting Bank. That is the regional export bank based in Cairo, which most of the, I think probably about 18 or so African countries are members of Uplifting Bank. And South Africa is not actually taking membership. But because of the budgetary constraints that are there on the side of the South African government, I think it was a decision that it was not going to take the share at that stage. But because of the strategic fit that it has with us and also giving us better access to other financing other than the current, our current innovative institutions and even our EFIs, that will allow us probably to get more into the SMT or smaller, small and medium transactions that we want to get into. We find the right leader also to get into support of the South African exporters in importing or importers in other countries that are importing from South Africa. So we think that link with them will be very important. And I think that will be subject to the committee where it will cost. But at the moment, we have initiated the due diligence evaluation of the bank and of our intended stake in the bank, which each year we have indicated an initial amount of $15 million as a strategic investment for this year. Performance against the targets in terms of approval, 432 million against the actual of 116 million. I have already sort of highlighted the fact that there have been some cancellations on the project that were already in the pipeline. The main reason why there was cancellation is that immediately we announced the market, which we announced around November last year, that there's not going to be any additional IMU support facilities that we need. Then we found them, you know, sort of some of them cancelling their transactions and go all the way to more. So that's actually influenced the main influence us not getting approval numbers that we hoped for. Our pricing on the export of the major sort of budget control.
I think last time when we came, I think it was around 10 cents. And it has because of additional positions that have been increased and the scarcity of some of the positions was actually been struggling for months to try and fill an actual position. Promotion administrative positions which are easy to fill have been filled up quite quickly. But at those level of project underwriting, because we had going ahead on here against the banks, that becomes very hard. And in terms of the vacancy rate, administrative it has improved, but at the professional level, they still struggle. But in terms of exact numbers, you can submit those.
Thank you. The terms, our terms to the bank clients, to our clients, actually based on the market practices in terms of calculation of the premium price or the premium that we charge, and taking into account the cost of funds and the margin that the banks would want to charge, and then we put a risk premium that is based on our assessment of both the commercial risk and the political risk of a particular country or a particular destination country in which the exports are going. We have an elaborate model, internal model, that also takes the best practice from the OECD countries in terms of how they policy, in terms of how they calculate the country risk rating. So we have rated all the countries in terms of conventional, internationally accepted rating standards, and therefore that also determines how much premium we can charge in the
particular project will determine the amount of revenue. So it's more of an actuarial valuation of the risks that are attached to particular project. Currently, in terms of the percentage, it really varies. Some projects will be 0.75%, others can go into probably about 2.8%, you know, it will depend on those kind of risk levels that we observe or that we have calculated. In terms of the currencies, most of the, because I mean, we are dealing in the export market, and that's where also the challenge can be in terms of the IMU, and I want to bring it in as well. We do underwrite projects mostly US dollar, and therefore all our liabilities will be US dollar denominated. We have been allowed not to exchange those back into rand, but we sort of reserve, some of our reserves reserve in US dollar. Therefore, our assets are meant, have been meant to match those liabilities. Currently, we are dealing with a new asset liability management that is modeling exercise, which indicates that now, from now on, we'll be matching the ratio of our liabilities with the assets that we hold. And that will also determine the minimum regulatory capital that we should not reach in terms of our activities. So it's more like a self-hedge. We don't have that problem of currency movement, very different currency. We do have rent liabilities which have been with projects that have been done in rent, but those are actually declining quite rapidly as well, while the US dollar was increasing. And we have been using those to manage you know, the money market and the capital market movements in South Africa on that portfolio. I think my guess is that probably by around 2030 or so, we may not necessarily be taking any new rent liabilities that are coming through. Unless the rent becomes the currency, which probably is going to be between different countries like Mozambique and Zambia, that would be a good intention. I don't know. That will pan out. Approving transactions, it really depends on, but some transactions take shorter to approve because we have already dealt with that line before and we have projects in that country, so all the information is easy to get from the current project we have and the experience we have. Some projects are quite complex and we find that the due diligence process can take anything from 4 to 6 months, and after that there will be lengthy negotiations on the structure of the funding, and then you know, there will be also some marketing study, global marketing studies that are done. So I said that sometimes it takes about 6 months to actually close, or 3 years to close a project. Others take up for about 6 months depending on the size of this project and the complexities of the project. So it's really, really very, very depending on each of the projects that we have. And most of the projects that we are dealing with are medium and long-term. Medium things that means that in excess of two years. For the portfolio, current portfolio, the length of the project is about 8 years. So it's quite a more of a long-term project. And we have mentioned that also we are in the capital market, I mean the capital goods sector, as opposed to commodities. So we do not offer short-term insurance products, which is quite easy to do, you know, not easy, but I think it is not as complex to fund, you know, trade, to do trade finance. We have actually done a market gap analysis, and we discovered that the shorter term market is well serviced by current banks. Those are trading, you know, commodities, small consumables, and raw material products as well, which would probably be anything to about 180 days. That is a market that's quite vibrant, and the credit guarantee sort of
market, simply because of the competition that comes from other countries that also are trading in capital goods, like nothing but Chinese, but okay, as well as Americans. So South Africa is very actually competing against the other countries in the Western, so it does really go to the core of the competitiveness of the South African producers of those productive capital goods. Really, we do struggle with the issue from what we have gathered in this financial study that we have done. While the banks sometimes, you know, they concentrate a lot on what they already know, you know, the kind of clients that they have been doing business with, it's very difficult for the black industry to actually access financing. And that would probably need some sort of a developmental intervention. We are participating in the Black Industrial Program of the DTI at the moment in order to look at how we can customize some of our product offering in order to make it, you know, much more accessible to the emerging black industries. I think that sort of the answer to the question of the chairman. Yes, it's true that we have seen our dear price also being criticized of not coming to the party as well as smaller traditional activities. And we think that Exim Bank would be a good way to start on a one-stop shop type support for the smaller transactions. And we would like to, in the absence of that happening in South Africa, would like to use this Exim connection in order to also access the market and market culture from that other source that may be more amenable to in terms of the IMU, yes, recommendations were made the last time we were here when this committee did, but as we fact that we may not be able to achieve the work that is done because of the shortage of the IMU funding from the National Treasury. We have been engaging with the National Treasury and the Department of Trade and Industry, or through the Department of Trade and Industry. And last year, we were located an additional 150 million rents toward in the current legislative period, which is good enough that we have had that, and we are really happy that that was the amount that could be allocated. But that has still left countries that are for, I think, 18 would be around 350 million rents that would be, that is not going to be funded. And that is on the basis of the current commitments, because we have not been approving any further since that we have not been approving any further IMU. And therefore, this is the money that we are still grappling as to where it is going to come from. And engaging with the minister as well as the national treasury to try and find out whether this could be.
Thanks. Hola. What are your thoughts on the option of open credit for customers, or I don't know what you call, refer to them as customers, clients, whatever. And in terms of your funding shortfall, why do you not say to the National Treasury that you can access state guarantees and to go to the that you could either give to the clients to go and raise a fund from private institutions, or you could use those state guarantees to raise from other private institutions at a discounted rate, and then pass that on to your clients, or be a facilitator for your clients to raise that from the capital market, from the private market, using a state guarantee.
I think maybe about your entering the role, and as a result, it forms part of only around 5% of our total operating costs. But that's excluding the return of outsourcing related to investment fees. And if that is included, it works out to around 12% of the total cost. And in terms of the question that you asked, in terms of open credit, the ability to be able to do that. And the CEO was highlighting, for most of this particular project that comes through, specific assessment criteria we have to apply to the different countries and all of that. So as such, due to the uniqueness of every project, it requires specific approval. But in terms of using the guarantee that we have, because based on the mandate that we have, that's linked primarily to the insurance business, not linked to the extent of financing, because what we need to provide the insurance, the IDC and other DFIs are there to provide the financing. Now going into that would mean that would have to be some amendment that would have to be made, because it would be different to what we're currently doing right now.
Right, I was talking about using the state guarantees as an ability to use it against your insurance products. You've got, one thing that government is not short of is assets and cash and bank. So you could use that as a as an anchor on your insurance products, for your credit insurance. But that's really where I was going with it.
Currently, because of being the official government export credit agency, the market for our client, they see us effectively as a government. So when they go out in the market to raise funding, especially dollar funding, because they usually have to go to the market or capital market to raise it, they use ECIC policy as a means of getting attracting and more cost-effective funding. But still having said that, that will be linked to South African government's rating, the credit rating of the South African government itself, which at the moment is hovering out investment credit. And therefore, if you have been competing with Japan or US Exim Bank or some of the European OECD, they will find it much easier to access cheaper funding to market than the North African bank. That's why IMU was sort of assisting in bringing us to equal competitive level with the government. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for the presentation. As there are no other further questions, thank you very much. We'll move to the next presentation by Nimit from Nimisa.
Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. This presentation that I'm going to be making will be summarizing the performance of the National Meteorological Institute of South Africa for the fourth quarter. I'm looking at both financial and non-financial performance. Being the last quarter of the year, presentation of the performance achievements for the quarter tends to also focus on the whole year as a whole, because we're consolidating what we have been doing throughout the year. Just as a quick summary, the highlights for the quarter have been that Shamlimisha managed to achieve meet 21 of our 23 targets. On one of the targets we attained 90%, I will talk to it later, which is the target of having postgraduate studies. We were supposed to have 10, we managed to achieve only 9, one of which, the 10th one, we felt it was not appropriate for the student to be exposed to the training that we want to take them through before they are exposed to nephrology as a field. So we converted that to an internship for a year as an entry point to the PhD program that they will be doing abroad. On the other target, which is the percentage funded by countries, we met 97.5 to that target. So doing a calculation on the overall performance, it works out to an achievement of 99% overall. And in the quarter report that we submitted, we indicated that we still had the audit work still outstanding. That has since been concluded 100%, and we've achieved a clean audit in that regard. There were a few programs that we were working on. The major highlight on that was the work that we're doing for the evidential preservation of equipment that, if you remember, due to the Hendricks judgment in the Western Cape High Court in 2011, there were no evidential preservation calibrations that were conducted in the country since then. There has been work that was done. Dreyer, the German company that manufactured the breathalyzer, has asked the equivalence of the NEMISA in Germany, the BTB, I can't say the German full name for it, to do tests on the Dreyer breathalyzer. They have conducted those tests. The results were analyzed by the SABS, an expert in the SABS, and then now an application has been put through to the NRCS to look at reintroducing this breathalyzer. So early NEMISA, we met with Dreyer Germany and Dreyer South Africa to work on a testing and calibration infrastructure and methods for when we introduce. There is a pilot that will be run in the Western Cape, and we have been contributing to this, and that has been going very well, the preparations to that. We, as a NEMISA, as you know, Jefferson, we contribute to the development of the standards quality accreditation and methodology infrastructure, commonly known as SWAM, within the SADC region, and through what you call the AFRIMED, through the African continent as a whole. We have the GA of the SADC SWAM in Kinshasa. We as NEMISA hold the secretariat for the SADC MED, which is methodology and legal methodology. We discussed a couple of items, some of which are very important in terms of contributing to our national priorities as espoused by the industrial policy action plan. One of the discussions talked to the technical barriers to trade annexed to the SADC protocol on trade. And we were trying to work out a work program that would focus on assisting the implementation of the TBT annexure, as well as the SADC industrial policy framework. We as well participate in international funded programs that fund the SADC SQAM development. As NEMISA, we managed to get approval of a web program that we're NEMISA supporting the CIPM, CGPM, which is the General Council on Weight and Measures as part of the META Convention. There is a program that is funded by PTB to the tune of 1.5 million, which will be income that would be coming through to the MISA. We had consistently this income over the past couple of years, where as the MISA, our position in the African SQAM infrastructure, we are one of the highest ranked NMIs on the continent. So we provide the skills and training to the other developing NMIs in our sister African countries. One of the highlights that is worth mentioning is our support to the nuclear industry. We held a workshop on quality radiation therapy that was hosted by ourselves, where we invited radiation oncologists, radiation therapists, physicists from public and private hospitals to look on implementing a program that assesses the radiation equipment, the doses that are being given by different radiation equipment for radiation therapy and diagnostics, such as PET scans and those kind of equipment at hospitals. This was a huge success, which was attended by both the IAEA and a few international agencies. We have got very good support from the Department of Health to implement this program that will be funded by the IAEA in partnership with the Department of Health, and the MISA will be providing the measurement infrastructure to ensure that the measurements are reliable and accurate, and the doses or let me say data that would be collected there would be useful going forward in ensuring safety of the patients that go for radiation treatment and diagnosis. In the past quarter, we reported that we have signed an MOU with Itamanet, which is a lab that is under the NRF that looks at production of products within the nuclear space for diagnostics and treatment. We signed that MOU, which according to our act, we were nominating them for high energy neutron measurements to be a nominated entity that handles that for us, because they have a beam that is one of the actually one of two in that range in the world, at the range of 20 MeV and higher, an investment that the South African government has made. Because of that, we had to then designate them, according to the international laws, designate them as a designated institute to handle these high energy neutral measurements and traceability to those measurements. And that has been successfully done. The one meeting that was held with the European Neutron Meteorology Laboratories, where two laboratories, the Paris Institute of Radio Protection, the IRSN, and the PTD from Germany committed to provide funding from the organization to fund the development work that needs to be done at Itama Labs to optimize the beam line itself. So, post or following that designation, that is turning on, we as NMISA continually trying to assist the laboratory at ITAMA to be accredited to ISO 17025 to ensure that those measurements, because for metrology within the SADA SQAM and the international metrology community, we agree that it has to be an accredited laboratory that provides traceability and measurements that can be relied on. Progress against national priorities. I put ministerial priorities there was just to separate within the organization priorities that are more related to IPEP and other programs. We call them ministerial, and the rest of the work that we do is national priorities as being the National Oncology Institute. There is a recapitalization project. We have reported in previous reports the challenge that the MISA is facing of aged infrastructure. We eventually got approval from the National Treasury to register a public-private partnership program or project that would help us to conduct a feasibility study that determines the requirements for the new infrastructure, as well as recapitalize the national measurement system equipment that goes with it. The program is run in two parallel legs, one being the accommodation project, which looks at a feasibility study for new accommodation for laboratories and offices. At the moment, the project is on set against the timeline. We have received a need analysis that was completed as part of the project plan. We are now at the stage where we've just approved the options analysis, and international benchmarking, as I speak, has been conducted, and we would be in a position possibly by the end of October, early November, to have a feasibility study on the table that has considered the options that we were looking at. Maybe just indicate the options are now pointing to the possibility of developing an infrastructure at the campus of the Innovation Hub, just across the road from the current location, which is at the CSIR campus. This is good news because this is owned by government, so land ownership issues would not be considerations that might negatively affect development, while it is within the knowledge access within the area where there are universities, there are research entities which allows for the placing of a National Meteorology Institute in a very strategic position. In terms of the other leg of the project, which I said, as I indicated, is running parallel, we are looking at upgrading the equipment. If you look at the financials of the organization for a quarter, you will see that there is a lot of unspent funds in the budget that we budgeted for. Those funds have been committed to the procurement of the equipment. However, due to the delays that we are accustomed to in the area, for example, the equipment that we're procuring are not commercial equipment that you buy from the shelf. Equipment that have to be tailor-made for us from the original equipment manufacturer. It takes anything from 6 to 12, other times 18 months for the delivery. So the fund has been committed. However, the equipment has not been delivered as yet, so we couldn't make payments as yet. We are comfortable with the progress as an organization. We are comfortable that the parallel process will eventually yield a recapitalizing NISA that is in the future able to respond to the technological advancements and measurement needs associated with that. The other national priorities that we have been working on is related to IFAS, under green energy saving industries and air quality. We have been supporting the Department of Environmental Affairs, who's working in collaboration with the South African Weather Service in the first phase of their project for the establishment of South African air quality information systems, commonly known as SWAIS. The NEMIFA continues to provide measurement infrastructure and support to improve the quality and reliability of air quality measurement results. As part of this, our data analysis laboratory has worked on projects that are presented there. They've improved the national measurement standard for hydrogen sulfide and nitrogen, developed a purified reference gas mixture that contains what are called nitrates, the benzene, toluene, ethyl benzene, and xylene, the nitrogen, as well as developing national methane standards for hard gases in nitrogen to ensure that there is traceability for the measurements that are conducted in relation to the studies that is run by the Department of Environmental Affairs and the South African Weather Services. Still related to green energy savings and safeguarding food and the environment, we know that nothing that we put in the environment actually disappears. Mainly chemical pollutants will tell humans through the food that we eat. Water we drink and air we breathe. These pollutants endanger our health. Children especially are vulnerable to toxins such as mercury, pesticides, flame retardants, and drug residues. There is an important and very heavy reliance on accurate and reliable measurements to ensure that our exposure to these pollutants are at an acceptable level. At NEMILA, we have developed accurate measurements for determining hazardous chemicals, pollutants in air, water, sediments, and fish. Some of the services that were conducted in 2014 and summarized and concluded in the last quarter are presented on these slides, such as presence of pesticides, including their metabolites in blood, presence of perfluorinated contaminants in water, eggs, and sediments. We did this as part of a PhD study of one of the PhD partners at NEMISA, who was doing a study around the Orange River system. PAHs in fish, bed, and sediments. We did this in collaboration with the University of Northwest as part of a project that is funded by the South African Water Research Commission. We conducted PT or proficiency testing schemes for laboratories that consider organochlorides. PT schemes are very important, and it's one of the services that NEMISA provides to the quality infrastructure, because for accreditation, laboratories must have participated in proficiency testing schemes to prove their proficiency, so that when they get accredited by SANAS, they can demonstrate that they have participated in proficiency testing schemes that are organized by an independent organization like NEMISA. Part of energy efficiency and our contribution to energy efficiency, we have designed methods and specifications for the accurate measurements of LEDs. I think when I presented the strategic plan to the committee a few months ago, I indicated the importance of these standards, as we're importing a lot of these LEDs from markets that they claim certain performances, and you end up not having that performance when you have them in the market, and then the consumers get affected by that. We have designed and demonstrated a proof of concept for a facility to measure photometric properties of the LEDs. We are currently defining and testing this facility. After this, a calibration stage for LED products will be provided, and at least we are looking at probably going towards the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter of the current financial year. We also improved an AC-DC transfer difference calibration and measurement capability. This is in line with established standards 474, which say that all electrical energy meters must be calibrated at an accredited calibration laboratory. in support of business cultural services and cutting edge ICT technologies and telecommunications in South Africa and indeed across the world. Fiber optic power meters remain important ICT industry because they are used as a diagnostic tool during installation and maintenance of telecommunications networks. During the year, a new traceability link was established to the National Network Standard for Spectral Responsibility at Telecommunications Wavelength. Previously, fiber optic meters were sent overseas to another NMI to be calibrated. This was following the decommissioning of the room temperature absolute standard radiometer, which was used previously. This calibration can now be done internally, reducing the cost and eliminating the risk of breakages during transport of these radiometers when we send them overseas for calibration. One of the indicators or areas that we're working on is supporting SMEs from a measurement point of view. We participated in the SME Expo, a trade show that was organized by NSBC that was held in March of 2015. We have developed a video that brings measurement to the SMEs in a simplified manner. It's an animated video that we use to demonstrate the importance of measurement to the small enterprises. I think we have, when the portfolio committee visited the MIS earlier in the year, we did fly a short snippet from that video that we have during the expo screened this video and trained SMEs on the measurement toolkit that we have developed. Just going to the performance and achievements on core business, the summary for the year is that, as I indicated earlier, we did manage to achieve on almost all the targets that we had set for the year. The important ones being that we've managed to maintain the 52 gazetted national measurement standards. We have managed to increase, you will note that on the slide it says 116, in the report it says 411. This is because an additional number that we have submitted for listing in the key comparison database was approved after we had closed the report. So the number currently is 416. This is a very important number internationally because when importers look at measurement certificates that come from a country, they quickly go into the e-comparison database and check, does the country have a measurement capability register in the comparison database that proves that the certificate can be relied on? If not, then they do the testing themselves and who knows what answers they would come up with. So that is a very important number. SMEs will continue increasing this number. I think the next NMI on the continent that comes after NMISA is NIS in Egypt with just over 100 CFCs registered. So you can see the gap, which is why SMEs will have to participate and work very hard in helping develop the other NMIs on the continent. The following slide I just put in just to indicate how we did on each of the target. I will not talk in detail around those slides. They were just summaries of indicating, for instance, the 52 gazetted national measurement standards that were registered. The improvements, as you know, we maintain, keep, maintain, and develop the national measurement standards. So when we have 52, we have taken a decision that will take between 12 and 15 in a year, and improve them, and not just maintain them at the same level, ensure that we keep abreast with developments in the world. The human capital development program, as well as the number of PLCs registered in the KGDB, the number of accredited laboratories, we've maintained all our laboratories accredited to ISO 17025 for testing and calibration laboratories. ISO Guide 34 for those that produce certified reference material, like the production laboratories that produce certified reference material. This is mainly in the chemistry section. I've already related to those CMCs. In terms of budget spend, the target was to spend 50% of the budget for NMS recapitalization, for modernization, and we ended up attaining 65. As I indicated earlier, this was not a measure per se of the procurement of the NMS, but a measure of the funds that were moved for the year. In terms of commitment, we've indicated in the report that the majority of the tenders have been awarded. Those that could not be awarded had since been awarded in the first quarter. Some of them we will be rerunning for various reasons. Determination becomes very important when you're dealing with measurement, and some of the dissemination methods we use is through engaging with industry. One of the most important methods is to ensure that we detox at conferences and workshops of within the sector, and we've managed to exceed the target to give at least 87 talks at conferences and workshops that's related to improvement and development of measurement, measurement and measurement standard. This was mainly because we had allowed the students that were doing MSCs and PhDs to go to these conferences. One of the conferences we hosted ourselves, the IMECO, which we hosted in the beginning of last year. It's very important when we host, it shows confidence from the international metrology world that we have the capabilities. Secondly, it allows our scientists to be exposed, because when it's an international conference held elsewhere in the world, we cannot fly all our scientists to those conferences. So it was very good that we managed to have the conferences hosted by ourselves and we could give more presentations. Improving of skills within the organization, we have managed to have at least 45 staff members with postgraduate qualification. This relates to MSCs and PhDs. The one that I related to earlier, which is the postgraduate bazaar, we attained 9 instead of 10. That was the target. The cost or the expenditure on training as a percentage of personnel cost, we ended up at a figure of 3% as opposed to the target that we had of 2%. And this was a very good thing, I must say, because it also indicated the confidence and the relationship that we are building stronger and stronger between ourselves and the universities, both locally and internationally. We measure as well our relationship with the clients in terms of disseminating measuring the expertise and services in South Africa. We measure the number of complaints that we receive from customers as part of ISO 17025 or any ISO standard that relates to quality. We have to measure our customer satisfaction. This is from the people we trained and the people we disseminated the measurement expertise too. We had a target of having less than 5%. We did achieve that. At the end of the year, we were shooting at 1%. Actual expenditure to revenue for the shift, we had a target of 98% of expenditure for the year. We looked here at even the commitments that we had for the year, and came up with that figure of 98%, which is meeting the actual target that was set. As I indicated, this led to an overall annual achievement of 99% for the year. I thought it would be important to also highlight the human capacity development and the recruitment that we have been making in the year. Also focusing on employment equity targets that were set for 2014-15, on the multi-year plan that we set to eventually come close to the national employment equity profile, looking at the demographics. 2014-15, we're targeting to be at 55% black and 40% white. We, during the recruitment, appointed about 47, we ended up eventually at 47 white individuals, 81, which is 58%, African staff members in the organization, which is about the 55% target that we had set. So indeed, we have been doing well in this regard. It's important to note here is that this have been people with MSCs and PhDs that were recruited into the organization. Some part of the human capacity development program where they had gone through the training program, they had completed their PhDs, and they had completed their MSCs, and we confirmed them in employment. The funded vacancies that we started off with were 59. Vacancies that we managed to fill today were 43. Vacancies not filled were 16. And this still indicates the challenge that we are having of not having the abundance of the kind of skills we are looking for in the market, which underscores the importance of continuing with this human capital development program that we are implementing currently, focusing both on recruiting students and training them, as well as training the staff that are within the organization. One typical example is we had an individual who was interested in gas methodology in the organization. We sent them to CRIS, the Korean Research Institute for Standards and Science, for a 3-year period where they did a PhD in gas methodology. We know this is the first on the African continent to have a PhD in gas methodology employed at the National Methodology Institute. In terms of the financial performance, the revenue versus budgets, the table there indicates the revenue that we received from the DTI, the sunset that we received from DTI, just over 202 million. We then generated income from rendering of services, and because of the fund that we had in the bank accounts for the year due to the delay, the fact that equipment gets delivered over a longer period, we then generated interest of about 3.1, and that indicates that total of 214 million. And as I indicated, the government against that budget as presented in the table was in line with the pledge. There were some areas where there was some slight over expenditures, one of them being contracts or contracted services. This was due to the number of students that we had in the organization. We had to have more lab coats that were cleaned, and that led to that kind of over expenditure. As things stand now, cash and cash equivalents at the end of the year is about 190 million, most of which is funds that are committed towards the payment of the orders that we made for national measurement standards. The question that might be asked is, has National Treasury approved the rollovers of this fund into the following year? Yes, we've had an engagement with National Treasury from the previous year. We've had the rollover approved. We have just submitted for the rollover for this year, and we are confident that that approval would be granted, as this is mainly commitments for expenditure that needs to be undertaken to ensure that the national measurement standards are upgraded. So in terms of the recapitalization project, the funds that are in the organization, that are in the bank account, it's more those that are related to the recapitalization of the national measurement standards, funds related to the feasibility study towards the accommodation of the NYSA. Those have been spent. This brings me to the end of the presentation, Chairperson. If there are any questions, I would be happy to take them.
Thank you. Members, honorable of the Senate, followed by honorable member Williams, honorable member Albert, and the Prof. In that sequence, thanks.
Thank you very much. Just having a look at your financial statements here. I just want to understand how your current assets have jumped by just short of 100 million rand in a financial year, while your receivables from exchange have decreased by a million, as well as your total liabilities have increased by 4 million. What are those liabilities that has seen an increase like that? And your... that's
enough. Just on that financial statement. Thanks. Thanks, Jeff. First, I just want to welcome the input. My only concern is really around the vacancy rate. And I'd just like to know, you said that you'd put measures in place to deal with the vacancy rate, but I just want to know, are these measures working? I mean, are you always going to have this situation where we don't have the qualified people in the country? And it's going to affect your performance eventually. And so I just want to know, are you just going to stick to this one issue, or you know, how much emphasis are you putting on this? Because I feel that it's very important. You've got quite a small staff. I know they're highly qualified, but there's a small number of them. And as your vacancy rate increases, it's going to really hit on your service, you know, delivery capacity. And I just want to know about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeffers. My question is more general in nature in terms of our operations. How do you source the items that need to be calibrated, measured, and certified You know, there's so many goods coming into South Africa, goods being manufactured in South Africa, being used for measurements and so forth. How do you control that, that there's a standard throughout the industry that keeps people safe and that provides the quality of products out there? If you can just give me your strategy around that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just two short questions. The first one is that one can see that emissions using people with very specialized and very rare skills. And now that we are so developed in comparison with the rest of the continent, how good is our retention rate of these very qualified people? Are they being posted internally or abroad? I know these people can be very demanding in terms of remuneration, and is comfortable with the rate of salaries that are being paid. And then the second question is, if you are so productive, it's very pleasing to see that your targets to a large extent have been met, and where they were not met, there was just a 5%, 2%, 1% deficit. Now, the question is, these people, when sometimes you send yourself away for up to 3 years, how then do you manage with them? If the positions are filled, can you fill them temporarily for such long periods? Thank you, Chair.
Member, Member, Hillows.
Thank you very much. I wonder if you can just give us a little bit more detail on the work that you are doing to resolve the legal impediments to the use of Dranger breathalyzer machine, because that is really one of the most important things that you could do in South Africa at the moment, actually, is allow traffic officers to start arresting truck drivers on the spot. And in order to do that, they really need to be able to test them accurately for alcohol on the side of the road. So, you know, it's really, really important. Really, it's important to the whole government to think strategy and turn around. So, if you could update us on that, I'd be grateful.
Thank you, Chairman. Allow me to take it from the bottom and to go back up. Just starting with the question that relates to the work that we're doing in relation to the testing and the calibration of breathalyzer equipment. As a metrology institute, we are not at the core phase of contributing to ensuring that the breathalyzers are introduced. There are certain tests. I think looking overall, as I indicated in my presentation, there has been work done by Blair themselves to ask PCB to do tests that will ensure that we are comfortable in relation to the SARS standard that has been published in that regard. Those results have been analyzed by SABS experts, which then led to a comfort that there can be an application to the NRCS for the reintroduction of the breathalyzer manufactured by Freya. What we have to do as an emission is to provide the infrastructure for calibration and ensuring that the tests are reliable. So we then we realized that I think there's a other regulation that says the limit will be decreased, the acceptable alcohol limit. We have subsequently developed an alcohol in water standard that will be used as a certified reference material that goes to the level that are required by the regulation. I think ours goes to an order of magnitude beyond what is required, because if you want to do proper calibration, you need to be an order of magnitude higher than what you are calibration. Our standard is 0.01% ethanol in water standard, and we are working on building this infrastructure that will ensure that we are able to calibrate the driver equipment once it is ready for use. We have a very strong partnership with the EPD themselves, who have done the initial testing. We have an MOU that I did renew last year in May with PTD on collaboration on projects such as this, to ensure that we have a shorter learning curve in terms of introducing new measurement capabilities in the country. From Prof, the question is the retention rate of this quality stuff that NEMIFA depends on. It is a very interesting challenge, very difficult. I think we did present on it previously when we put the strategic plan forward, that we are training the staff in very high competencies in very rare skills that they can only be but one national measurement institute in a country. So if we want metrologists, we can only get them in the mission, in essence. However, there are calibration laboratories that conduct testing and calibration, their diagnostic laboratories, that will give you skills that you can then upskill to make the metrologies. Whilst on the other hand, you need skills, if it's physics, you need pure physicists that are able to conduct the research towards the development of the standards before you can then start maintaining and disseminating them to industry. So it's a very interesting challenge, keeping and maintaining those skills. We have a workforce that is very committed to what they do. But as the Prof indicated, it takes rewards to keep people in their jobs. And one of the questions was, is the remuneration in line with the skills level of these individuals? It's a question we continue and keep asking ourselves. If we compare ourselves to international NMIs, not comparable, we are lower by far. However, last year we conducted a benchmarking exercise that looked at improving the salaries of the staff within the NMISA. We benchmark against PA entities within the government. We benchmark against industry, to whom we have realized that we're losing most of our best trained people too. And the board did approve an implementation of a process of improving the salaries of the staff, more especially the technical staff that I have mentioned. We are currently in the process of implementing a move towards the 50th percentile of the market in those markets that I indicated. We hope that it will help in addressing this major challenge of keeping them productive. And one of the questions was, how do you manage when you send
staff overseas for training. And the way we do it is in looking at what they are going to study for. For instance, if they are going to do a PhD abroad, we usually don't allow them to go for longer periods. It's only in special cases where we allow them to go for longer periods. But the PhD work or the research work that they will be doing overseas needs to be related to the development of measurement standards for the country. I'll give an example. We are currently looking at a situation which I believe when we come to present the strategic plan going forward, we will be able to detail in much deeper detail, where there is a redefinition of the standard international units, which means the kilogram, for instance, which is an artifact that is a platinum iridium standard that we keep as a primary national standard for the country. The realization of the kilogram is going to be redefined the place by 2018. Now, we need to be responding to that kind of move. So what we do is, in line with the redefinition of the kilogram, we would take one of the staff members, they start working on the project to implement our response to that redefinition. Then when they go overseas for training, they go overseas as part of developing the national measurement standard for the counts. So it's not necessarily they are away doing work that is unrelated to the mission. What we've done in the ACD program broadly is that even for students that are doing MSc's and PhDs, we insist that their projects have to be in the MISA related. Where possible, which is in the majority of the time, they need to spend time at the MISA working on these projects so that when they graduate and we start having prototypes that we put on the table and start testing for development, they work as a continuous problem. However, I must concede it's a very difficult challenge that we are facing. The only way is having a critical mass of skills, a pool that you can recruit from. And that is the strategy that we are trying to implement. But when you implement that strategy, whilst you have the challenge currently, it becomes a bit of a challenge. But we are working very hard with the directors and executives in the organization to try and work out a strategy for this. One of the interventions we've done is restructure the research and technology development division to have a section specific for human capital development that is staffed by a human capital development facilitator who is a technical person who is able to assist human resources division in doing the development, and getting a panel of retired experts to come in and assist us with this development. Also, opting for getting experts from other parts of the world to be part of this panel so that as we do the development, it is comprehensive and hopefully in the long run sustainable. From Honorable Albert, there was a question that related to how do you source these items that are to be calibrated, talk to the strategy of how you ensure that there is consistency in application of the standard across. I hope I am rephrasing the question correctly. If that is the question, then the answer is it's a quantity infrastructure that has got four legs. The one leg is scientific metrology that contributes as a base towards the operations of the other three legs. Accreditation being handled by SANS to ensure that labs that do the testing and calibration are accredited
and I spoke to Professor Dick Sutton that we sometimes run that ensure that that calibration is for labs that have improved proficiency. Then the other leg is standard, which is what the FAB has done, and then there's the leg of the NRCS legal methodology that looks at compulsory specifications, where those specifications are compulsory and get enforced through the NRCS. What we do as a mission, however, is to ensure that the national measurement standards are kept and ensure that all calibration that is done through standards, that there's accessibility to the national measurement standards. So we don't necessarily go and test in industry per se. We provide accessibility so that when a change is decided as whether did you do the testing, did you do the calibration, yes, were you accessible to the national measurement standard, if yes, then that assurance is given. If no, then other legal tools get implemented, which we as scientific methodology do not get involved in. I hope that sort of answers the question. I think the DTI can give a broader answer to how the whole quality infrastructure works together. And it is very important, and that's why in the draft presentation, I try to indicate and demonstrate how the four parts of the quality infrastructure work together to make sure that we have an efficient technical infrastructure. In terms of how do you source, how do you deal, how do you get these items to be calibrated, usually we maintain the national measurement standard. In areas where there is no capability in the council to do the calibration, we then perform the calibration, we develop the methods, we do the calibration as NISA. And through the quality system, we ensure that everything is done according to ISO 17.5. So we deal mainly with calibration laboratories that then calibrate industry standards, who then calibrate their working standards in or on the factory floor, so to speak. From Honorable Williams, the question is related to what I responded to with Prof in terms of the vitality rate, which is a challenge. It indeed is a challenge. The method that we implemented, we believe that to an extent they are working. We have managed to recruit the number that we recruited last year, I think 47 in all. If it's working to our satisfaction, maybe not, we would love to have more. And I think one of the areas that Prof advised when the PC visited NIMISA is the area of strengthening and enhancing the relationship with the universities to ensure that there are methodology-related qualifications that are given at universities. The challenge is you need a basic scientist and then develop them into a methodologist, which the classical academic program does not do that. We have started last year with the University of Johannesburg to offer an honors degree in methodology, focusing mainly on analyzing radiation. Our staff are then co-opted professors that work on teaching in that program. Our staff do teach at other programs where we have started getting the academics, introducing a methodology module to the postgraduate studies, and the NIMISA staff do go and give lectures on those modules to ensure that we have a pipeline that is much more substantial in terms of recruitment. This the last quarter, One of the things that I did is go on a roadshow with universities where we were enhancing the relationship with the universities to ensure that the training programs that are developed at universities do take into account. But most importantly, that when the research programs are designed for development, they take into account the measurement imperatives. So that's one of the weaknesses that we had as a council when we developed research programs for training. You find that you develop a program, then you later ask the question, how are we going to measure it? How are we going to ensure the quality and so on? And this obviously does contribute to the innovation hazard that we usually have when we have to turn these developments now into products at the end of the day. The question relating to the jump of current assets by just over a million, this mainly is related to the funds that are sitting in the bank accounts in terms of the recapitalization program, because at the end of the day, we could not, by the end of the year, spend those funds whilst the equipment is still under development and we are waiting for delivery to take place. So we will end up having funds that are sitting in our money market account awaiting for those equipment to be delivered at the end of the day. In terms of assets, we will very jump in assets as well, because most of the equipment has been the ones that we procured last year. I think I related to the X-ray photoelectron microscope that was a spectroscope that was delivered that adds to our assets, and that is why you see those jumps. It's mainly due to the recapitalization projects that we are running. In terms of the liabilities that have jumped, if the committee allows, what I have to do is go and give a detailed breakdown of what the liabilities relate to, and send it back as an answer that details what those liabilities related to. I think those were the questions that I picked up, unless there is one that I missed.
Thank you very much for the presentation. If let's, I think we should commend the minister for, as you are, that you correctly you received the clean one, which is very encouraging. We must commend you for that. Members, if we have no further questions or clarity, I think our next meeting will be on Friday in the morning, where we will receive the presentation both from NGR and NGB. So on that note, we then meeting the what's not this one? Or the venue is E249. In the new week. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.